Curtis Hill's law license in jeopardy, a non-binary gender option on driver's licenses, that plus a police organization with Hoosier links accused of being a scam, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 22nd, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission filed a complaint against Attorney General Curtis Hill in response to the accusations he groped four women last March. Democratic Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon and three legislative staffers accused Hill of groping them at a party at the end of last year's legislative session. An investigation by the Indiana Inspector General backed up those women's accounts, but a special prosecutor opted not to bring a criminal case against the Attorney General. The Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission says Hill, quote, committed criminal acts, which reflects adversely on his honesty, trustworthiness, or fitness as a lawyer. The nine-member disciplinary commission and its staff investigate complaints of alleged misconduct against attorneys. In its filing, the commission said Hill broke Indiana rules of professional conduct. The complaint is just the first step of the process for the commission. Hill will have an opportunity to defend himself, and the final decision and any potential punishment is in the hands of the Indiana Supreme Court. That could have serious consequences for Hill, who, by law, is required to be a duly licensed attorney. If disbarred, Hill would be ineligible to serve. How much trouble is Curtis Hill in? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, without any criminal convictions, is the Supreme Court really in a position to do anything here? I mean, they technically can, but...
Oh, you bet they can. You know, you cannot be Attorney General of the state of Indiana without a law license. You have to be admitted and in good standing with a law license in order to be Attorney General. That law license is granted by the Indiana Supreme Court. The Disciplinary Commission is an arm of the Indiana Supreme Court. And I would submit that he's probably in as much trouble or as much hot water for what he's done since the groping than the groping itself. Because all you have to have is reflect negatively on the profession, and your license can be in jeopardy. And when you have him telling one story one week and another story another week and then demeaning the people accusing him of what he did that night, you have problems. And if his law license goes, he can't be Attorney General. The question in my mind is what happens if that law license is suspended as part of the punishment for his activities?
That is a question that I think legislative leaders are currently grappling with. We talked to them about that this week. But the Disciplinary Commission did cite exactly what Ann just talked about. It wasn't just these are the things he's accused of, although the way they talked about it is as if he did them. It was here's how he responded to it. So how much trouble is he in?
I'm not really as qualified as Ann.
You're not an attorney.
Prepare yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know as much as about that process as Ann does.
I could say that again.
But I think this goes back to the original reason that Governor Holcomb and Chairman Hupfer and these and other legislative leaders called for him to resign, that he can't effectively administer that office when he's got this going on. You know, he can't effectively be the attorney. Now he's at risk of not being Attorney General anymore if the Supreme Court ultimately decides that his law license should be suspended or withdrawn. Now, that being said, I think legislative leaders were right after these kind of several iterations of charges not being brought. The prosecutor decided not to file charges here. They correctly said, look, we're not going to move to impeach. We are moving this into a political decision now. Voters get to decide next year whether or not he gets to continue to be Attorney General. I think that was the right decision. And I think if he somehow kind of gets side-doored here out of the office on a technicality, I think voters react, at least in the Republican Party, are going to react really negatively to that. And we're kind of in this culture nationally where we think all this is, you know, a lot of voters think all of this is rigged. It all favors the insiders. It all favors the elite. And that he's just kind of getting hosed here when they do have an opportunity next year to go in and vote for somebody else.
Let me just make one point there. But the Supreme Court has the power and has exerted the power forever over the conduct of lawyers, which may not be illegal conduct, but which reflects negatively on the fact that he holds a law license.
But for most lawyers, there's not a this political part of it.
But most lawyers aren't the chief legal officer for the state of Indiana either.
And that was one thing the Disciplinary Commission said. It said that because he is the Attorney General, there is almost a higher standard.
There is a higher standard.
But in reference to this, we're setting ourselves up for perhaps a really protracted battle on this, too, because if he loses his law license entirely, the question is easy. But if it's only suspended for, say, 60 days... does he stop being Attorney General for 60 days? We don't know how that would work.
A lot of firsts here that we would be dealing with, I think, in the state of Indiana. And you're right, I don't know the timetable. Would the timetable push it so far once there are the appeals and everything is exhausted? Would it push it beyond the opportunity that voters have to express their views at the ballot box? I don't know. And I don't think we really have precedent for that. Now, the distinction that the legal representative for Curtis Hill is making here is that when we talk about attorney conduct or misconduct, we're talking about honesty, trustworthiness. Those are the sorts of things that are identified
in the
rules of conduct. And his contention, I'm just saying this is his argument, is that alleged sexual battery is neither of those things.
How about lying?
Is neither of those things. And I will just say this. The one thing that Curtis Hill has done well, if any attorney on the planet probably is well suited to represent him, it's Donald Lundberg, who is representing him here because he spent, 20 years, I think, as head of the Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission and handled, he probably wakes up at 3 in the morning, dreaming about the rules. So
legislative leaders so far are playing the let's just wait and see what happens game, right?
Yeah, I mean, they've moved it out of their venue and they think this is a better way to look at it. I mean, I focused on that same point in the thing. He's basically said, what does battery and sexual battery have to do with honesty and, trustworthiness?
And
although, I mean, wouldn't most people argue that if you can't be trusted to not commit a crime,
maybe that would be a problem.
Also, I think it's kind of interesting, and I'm sure they're going to keep it separate, but Donald Lundberg has a current contract with the Attorney General's office and has had for several years to provide ethical guidance. That's always entertaining as well.
He's doing a great job. There's no performance metrics in that contract.
Well, a House committee voted this week to make it harder for Hoosiers to change the gender on their driver's license at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which comes after the BMV recently added a non-binary gender option for state IDs.
The Bureau of Motor Vehicles now allows Hoosiers to list themselves as neither male nor female, and some state lawmakers want to ban that entirely, but a proposed floor amendment to do so wasn't offered. Instead, a House committee amended a bill to say that the BMV can no longer change someone's gender on their ID with only a physician's note. The person would now have to get their birth certificate changed, an act that generally requires a court order. Republican Representative Holly Sullivan, who authored the amendment, says she's trying to ensure gender changes go through the proper agency. And she claims her amendment isn't a reaction to the recent non-binary option offered by the BMV. The ACLU of Indiana calls the move, quote, a spiteful reaction to the BMV's new policy.
Mike O'Brien, let's start with this, I suppose. Let's get it out of the way. Are you buying that this has nothing to do with what the BMV is now offering?
Well, timing's really curious then. It really came together nicely if it wasn't intentional. I think, there's a couple questions here. Why on earth would you do this during the legislative session, right? I mean, why wouldn't you wait until May or June?
Until they're gone.
The answer to that was this: there were real people that had petitioned the state for this, and there was a real timeline established to give them an answer, and this is what, passed, and, right. The state had committed in writing to do that. I think Governor Holcomb has said, these people asked us for this. It's legal under, the federal law allows it. And I'm here to deliver great government service to everybody. So regardless of what you think about the underlying, framework of the issue, which is not popular with the legislature, as we've seen in the bias crimes debate. But it couldn't have hit at a worse time in the context of the legislative session. But I understand that it's not a invalid argument either, that maybe another agency should be involved in this decision.
Yeah, it shouldn't be
making.
A clerk at the BMV who's deciding, is this
right?
It should be,
is right.
This correct?
And you should go through some formal process, so you're just not going back and forth.
Governor okayed it, too. So, I mean, it's not some clerk at the BMV that's deciding this. It seems to be in accord with the policy that the governor is advocating, and I think he's right on it, by the way. And obviously her nose had to be growing when she gave that statement saying it had nothing to do with it, because they had been caucusing for hours and hours and hours over this very issue.
Yeah,
and
the day before.
They need to get these social issues behind them. It is just so ridiculous that we have so many problems in this state and they waste so much time and energy and effort on trying to stop a tidal wave of change in the social area that's going to come whether they like it or not.
Well, yeah, but you can make the argument for biased crimes. I mean, that hits in social issues, but people are...
Well,
to get them off the table, you got to deal with. You have to do it.
Brian Bosman brought up that this isn't great timing for this conversation.
No, he said he spent, you know, virtually all last week dealing with this driver's license issue and that it basically has halted progress on bias crimes. He said, interestingly, when we talked to him, that some people who had maybe decided one way on bias crimes are now leaning a different way. Now, he wouldn't...
say which that was,
but it definitely came up at a bad time as the Republican caucus is already dealing with that issue.
Yeah, how much is this going to play into that?
Oh, it's unavoidable. There will be clearly an intermingling of the two for the reasons that...
It's the same decision point, right? I mean, you're deciding where are you on gender identity. That's what these legislators are having to decide.
Indiana, they're not anywhere on gender identity. It isn't up to them, okay? That's
well,
the
it
problem.
Is, but it isn't.
Well,
keep in mind, Indiana is not typically in the vanguard of states when it deals with social change. We've seen that time and time again. Now, in this case, maybe this is a good example of why there's this sort of, rumination on this issue, because I think we're only one of six states right now that have the X option for registrants, even though the Association of Authorities who oversee Bureaus of Motor Vehicles say it's suitable. And now it is becoming, this is only a two-year-old thing. I mean, Oregon, I think, is the first to do it.
That's far too advanced.
But you have some countries, Germany, Australia.
We don't like to be that far ahead on that sort of thing.
Right.
No,
but, and that's, so that's one point. We don't like to be out front. The other thing I would mention is, I think people are missing the boat. Has anyone looked at his or her birth certificate, native Hoosiers, as I am lately? I would guess that, I'll say about Marion County, because I was born here in Marion County a number of years ago, and as were my kids. My kids don't have a gender, all three of them. They're 21, 19, and 18. They don't have a gender on their birth certificates. And I think until 2010, at least I think Marion County and maybe the entire state. So we have a whole legal structure built on something that doesn't exist. So there's your story, Tim.
I'm going to go look at my
solid
personality.
I was born in Illinois.
Almost like we're making a political decision here.
Almost.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the Bureau of Motor Vehicles provide a non-binary gender option for state IDs? A yes and B no. Last week's question, does President Trump's emergency declaration at the U.S.-Mexico border set a dangerous precedent? 85% of you say yes, it does. 15% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, some local police departments in other states have issued scam alerts about letters from the National Police Association, a group that traces back to Indiana with links even to the Attorney General's office. A report in the Indy Star shows the National Police Association is a relatively new nonprofit that engages in political and issue advocacy around law enforcement, including organizing a boycott related to former NFL player Colin Kaepernick's protests and filing a court document in support of a police officer who shot a young black man in Ferguson, Missouri. The letters, soliciting donations in 40 states, not including Indiana, indicate that the money goes to helping local law enforcement, but police departments say they're not getting those dollars, and some issued scam alerts about the letters. The organization is headed by Hamilton County resident Eddie Hutchinson, who works for the Indiana Attorney General's office as a fraud investigator. Hutchinson denies his group is a scam, and the AG's office only said they didn't know anything about his involvement with the group. John Schwanes, is the reaction from the Attorney General's office in this story sufficient?
Boy, did we just talk about something a few minutes ago involving the Attorney General's office?
He might have been a little distracted this week.
May have been a little distracted. I mean, nothing happens in a vacuum, of course. One would think that when you're dealing with One of the key subject areas that one's office oversees, which is consumer protection and the battle against allegations of fraud and improper solicitation of money, and that is a key component of what that office does, that there might have been a heightened sensitivity to react. I'm not saying who's right, who's wrong, but there might be a heightened desire to.
So was that a no, that it wasn't a sufficient response?
It probably was not a sufficient response.
There.
I don't like, probably. Again, I see shades of gray, Anne, where you see everything in black and white. But no, from an optic standpoint, I think that
you need your eyes checked.
Well, I certainly need my eyes checked, believe me.
Would this be as much of a story if he weren't a fraud investigator in the Attorney General's office?
Probably not. I mean, that definitely made some, you know, everyone's eyebrows go, what? You know, I mean, I don't know much about that organization, but I mean, they're a police association with no police as members. I have no idea what they're spending their money on. I mean, there are all kinds of red flags on that issue. And the fact that, they had members who were on their board who didn't know they were members of the board. I mean, the fact that that somehow got through with the president of it being in the Attorney General's fraud department is crazy.
Yeah, what's the right response from Curtis Hill here?
He's fired. That's the right response from Curtis Hill. I mean, the allegations that the media put out in there, and you're right, there are people that are supposedly on the board in positions of authority on the board who say they didn't have any idea they were on the board. So you've got all of those questions about what they're spending their money on, and I think it reflects very negatively on the office. And the choice ought to be either you disband the organization or you get another job. It can't be, well, we didn't know. Okay, you know now. What are you going to do?
Well, apparently Don Lundberg has an ethics contracting agreement. Maybe he could check this out.
At least, is this one of those things where, let's say, for the sake of argument, that this organization has done nothing wrong, that everything they've done is completely and totally legal. Perception-wise, can this be allowed to continue the way it has been?
No. I mean, you're in a situation where the guy is going to have to investigate himself and find that he did nothing wrong.
You know, let's not presume anything.
It's kind of like Boeing.
The reaction should have been, right. The reaction should have been, at a minimum, we're suspending him while we investigate this and figure it out. And then if it's found that every box has been checked, nothing's been done wrong, but it's really not. You got to reassign him. You can't have him in the fraud.
Well, let me say this, because I sort of jokingly pointed it out to John, but in all seriousness, nothing happens in a vacuum. Obviously, the Attorney General was dealing with this disciplinary complaint this week, at least in part. Is that perhaps part of the reason why this one, maybe in their office, flew under the radar?
Oh, yeah, I've been in governor's offices and campaigns, and you're in the middle of a crisis, and then something like this comes up, and you go, "What?
What happened? What else?" It's very busy now collecting information on clergy abuse.
That's right.
So that's another.
But this one, you're
right.
You've
got all of those things, but you still, when you have something like that that so negatively reflects on the office, you don't put out a statement like that without at least discussing it.
Yeah, well, maybe they did. The Lugar Center and Georgetown's McCourt School of Public Policy released their latest bipartisanship rankings for Congress, and a pair of Hoosier lawmakers are near the top of their chamber.
The Lugar Center's Bipartisan Index measures how often a member of Congress introduced bills that attracted co-sponsors from members of the opposite party and how often they co-sponsor legislation from across the aisle. The recently released scores were based on the previous Congress, which covered 2017 and 2018. Both of Indiana's U.S. senators were in the top 10 for their chamber, Democrat Joe Donnelly fourth, Republican Todd Young, in his first term, ranking seventh. On the House side, Republican Susan Brooks rated the highest among the Indiana delegation, 41st, out of 435 members of that chamber. In a statement, former Hoosier Senator Richard Lugar noted that, despite the rhetoric and perception of Washington, D.C., overall bipartisan index scores improved for the third consecutive Congress.
Nikki Kelly, considering Joe Donnelly was fourth in the Senate for bipartisanship and then lost, how much do these sorts of metrics really matter to people anymore?
I mean, I think it's clear that we've seen a massive shift in the electorate to where they don't value bipartisanship as much as they used to. I mean, they know where they stand on the issues. They want their guy firmly in their corner. They don't want him listening to the other side. They don't want him compromising. And I think we're seeing that in the election results.
Yeah, are these increasingly becoming not relevant?
Sadly. I mean, I think... I mean, here you have Dick Lugar, who was, I mean, the personification of statesman of in many regards. It's just fallen out of fashion right now to put policy above party and to look at it, take a pragmatic approach to issues where you may see that compromise is the way forward. I mean, there was a time when compromise actually was seen as something to champion, that people, they saw that lawmakers went and they gave a little, they took a little bit, and that's, and we celebrated that even happened. In civics yeah. class. I mean, and now we've reached a point where any compromise seems to be bad, and I do think history is a pendulum, and so it's cyclical in nature. We'll see a shift back to a need for getting along and getting things done rather than gridlock.
If on the one hand it's lost relevancy in terms of the importance of bipartisanship, is it almost starting to swing right now to it's almost a negative? Is it really great news for Todd Young?
I think we've been in that. Yeah. And both parties have been in that situation now for years, where you got to really finesse your way across the aisle if you're going to, because back home people don't, to Nikki's point, I don't think they do want that. But I think we talked about this last week with the president's emergency declaration. Part of the problem here is we have removed the parts of the process because a president has been obstructed, one chamber of Congress has been obstructed. We've removed filibuster requirements. Now the president is using the
executive authority.
He was blocked by Congress on a policy matter, so rather than compromise on that policy matter, he's going this other direction. We've taken the things, the benchmarks out of the process that were put there on purpose to drive everybody to the middle, to force people to talk to each other, because you do need a critical mass of people to make big changes.
So if you're Todd Young, do you almost not want to say, hey, look, I was seventh in the Senate?
I think it's a good thing. I think it's good for voters to know it, because I do think that pendulum will swing back. I mean, you see what happens with the partisanship the way it is. Nothing gets done. And we need to get things done. And I frankly think that Todd Young deserves some credit for those three votes that he cast. He shows that he's not going to be a rubber stamp for every bad idea that Donald Trump has, unlike
I'll remember that in 2022.
Yeah.
He's very Todd Young is up for re-election.
That doesn't mean I'm going to vote for him, but it does mean that he deserves some credit for using some judgment on those issues and representing his state more than others.
All right, a billboard criticizing a long-standing Indianapolis Motor Speedway tradition was abruptly removed this week.
An organization known as Balloons Blow advocates against the large-scale release of balloons, citing damage to the environment. It's used billboards around both Disney World and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln to warn about the dangers balloons pose to wildlife. But a new billboard near the Indianapolis Motor Speedway suddenly disappeared this week. A big balloon launch has been an Indy 500 tradition for decades. Balloons Blow, said the company that owns the billboard, said the Motor Speedway asked for it to be removed. But IMS officials said no one from the Hoosier organization had anything to do with it. And a day later, the billboard operator instead said it viewed the advertisement as an attack and took it down.
And Delaney, beyond the back and forth finger pointing here, should IMS just stop doing the balloon release?
You know, it doesn't affect the race or the attraction of the race, and it does kill birds, and we have too much plastic in the world. I'd like to see them get rid of them.
Are you buying that IMS had nothing to do with the billboard coming down?
I'm not going to answer that, but I am going to say that this is
save the birds.
What's unbelievable? I watch this story, and I'm like, is there nothing we're doing? Is there no act in America anymore that isn't controversial, and two, doesn't have some group form to oppose that act? We're releasing balloons into the air on Memorial Day weekend. That's what we're doing. And we're not pumping we're pumping billions of tons of CO2 into the atmosphere in Asia. We're not saving the environment by getting rid of the balloons.
I don't think the environment needs saving. That's what I've been hearing.
That's
well,
right.
Finally,
there is no problem.
Finally, this week marked the start of March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournaments. Only one Indiana team on the men's side, Purdue, which won last night, while Notre Dame and Indiana represent the Hoosier State in the women's bracket. I want to get answers from all of you on this one. So, Mike O'Brien, if the legislature had legalized sports wagering by the time the tournaments had started, who would you put your money on both sides?
Yes, if it was legal and if I bet money on it. It pained me, but I have Duke.
Yeah. Oh.
It's hard to,
oh.
You look
you
at that bracket, it is hard to not pick
yeah,
Kentucky,
it
UNC.
Is.
I mean, you could go to Virginia and feel good about yourself.
It's one of those years.
Yeah, I'd probably pick UNC. I'd never pick Duke.
Gonzaga.
I always put Indiana. That's why I know I get my money back first for finishing last in the pool.
It'd be really hard for the Hoosiers to win the men's tournament this year.
I just squint and I see NIT.
I'm with Mike O'Brien on this one. I had to go with Duke. That looks like a great team. All right, very quickly on the women's tournament, who do you have winning the women's side?
We'll go with your Missouri
Tigers.
Yeah, Notre Dame.
I'll go with Notre Dame.
Well, you're going to go with IU here, too? Because they are in that
tournament. I am going to go with IU for this
one. There you go.
My heart tells me to go with Missouri, but my head tells me Notre Dame's got a really good shot to win. All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.